Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Namaste Radio. The intent of our programming is to increase awareness, inspire loving action, and ignite transformation and healing in our listeners, and through them, our world. Namaste Radio is brought to you by Namaste Publishing. Please join its interactive spiritual community. Communicate directly with authors, guest bloggers, and others like yourself who are spiritually seeking a better way of living. Connect, make friends, and be one with our new Namaste Global community at namastepublishing.com. And now, please welcome your host for this hour, Marie Bernard, on Namaste Radio, radio that will change your life.
Hello and welcome to Namaste Radio. I'm your host, Marie Bernard. Thanks so much for being with us for the very first Namaste Radio episode of 2011. Happy New Year. I hope you had a wonderful holiday. It's such a pleasure to be back with you. And I just would like to let you know that for 2011, we're going to be doing a show probably twice a month. So we won't be doing a weekly show anymore. So if you are a fan of this show and you haven't favorited the show yet, please do click on the little heart icon on the Blog Talk Radio player, and then you will get an email each week about an hour before the episode airs. So thank you so much for being with us to start out this fabulous year. And today's guest is Lee Gerdes, and he is the author of the book Limitless You, and he is also the founder of a company called Brain State Technologies, and what they do is brainwave optimization. So we're going to find out exactly what that is today and how it can help you to achieve your resolutions for 2011. Welcome to the show, Lee.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for being with us. So can you give us a brief overview of what exactly is brainwave optimization?
Brainwave optimization is a technology which utilizes a computer and sensors that rest on the scalp to view a person's brain, functional brain patterns. And these functional brain patterns, when viewed through the sensors, are picked up by the computer, and then they're reflected back to the individual by translating them to sound. And this sound is actually a translation of only the optimum frequencies in for the individual at the moment, so that the individual can then, the individual's brain then begins to resonate with those optimum sounds or optimal frequencies. And that resonance helps the brain move from a stuck pattern of general just dysregulation.
And so is the brainwave optimization kind of like a biofeedback? We hear the term biofeedback, and I'm wondering, is that the same?
Right. Biofeedback or neurofeedback are ways to pick up signals from the body or the brain and then teach the person to help themselves to achieve a self-regulation, or at least stop themselves from going further down a dysregulatory path. For example, if somebody has panic attacks, let's say, you can use biofeedback, and you can tell when the skin begins to perspire. And from that, you can determine that your anxiety is increasing. And then you can start deep breathing patterns or something like that to help you stop the going into the process of going into the process of being caught or in a dysregulatory state.
Okay. And so when you say a dysregulatory state, I mean, you used the example of a panic attack. I mean, that would be where your heart is pounding, you feel like you're going to die.
Yeah.
But I mean, for the average person who doesn't have extreme panic attacks, what would a dysregulatory state look like for the average person?
rage, sadness over an issue that's actually not a big issue but a small one, jumping to eat some comfort food because of stress, and being stuck in that pattern. It's like walking on a hike and you come to a place where there are many, many choices that you can choose to go down a trail. If you choose one of the choices to go down the trail and go down that path for a ways, you see that what you have to do, you reach a cliff. And so you're either going to jump sort of blindly off of this cliff, or you're just going to be stuck on the trail, or you're going to go back and, you know, to where the paths originated and choose a different path. When you're in a stuck pattern or a dysregulated state, you end up going down the path to the cliff, but you can't make a decision. You're either stuck or you literally jump off the cliff. In the case of, you know, a violent rage, for example, you're jumping off the cliff. You know, you're giving yourself over to that dysregulation. And so it's a way that the body has of, the brain has of regulating itself, its emotions, it's also its physical functions, and it's very important that we understand, I think, because it means a lot for our general well-being and spiritual well-being included, that we see ourselves as a whole being and the brain's driving or at the very center of all that. You know, that's part one of understanding this proposition. The brain drives. And the brain drives because of its functional pattern, and its functional pattern also eventually drives its own chemistry. For example, the brain picks up a severe threat when you're walking down a sidewalk, let's say, okay? And you see that someone, there might be extreme danger walking down the sidewalk, and your brain picks up that threat and immediately sends into, starts the brain and therefore, and the body subsequently in a chemical action to run or to fight. And so that's an example where the brain drives and the person doesn't have really anything to do with that decision. You know what I mean? The person observes the danger, of course, but the brain is the driver. And so if we can recognize how much the brain drives, then not only can we help ourselves by thinking about our own brain pattern, but more importantly, and I think it's the most important thing for the world, is that we can start to realize that what we see that we have done that hasn't been helpful, or that has been done to us, which is not helpful, what we see in unhelpful ways is really the result of an imbalanced brain and not the result of willful decision. Translated, that means we can understand and have a lot of comfort with forgiveness.
Okay, so it sounds like what you're saying is that when people do things that we would perceive as negative, or when we ourselves make mistakes and do things that we would judge ourselves for doing, generally those aren't conscious decisions that we make. It's based on our patterns and our habits that our brain is just kind of on autopilot.
Precisely. And every religion says the same thing. You know, in the Christian text it says, I do the things that I don't want to do. Oh, what a wretched person am I. Basically, we all see it manifest in habits, and sometimes those habits involve others, sometimes they just involve ourselves. Now, I really didn't want to buy that box of chocolate-covered cherries, right? And if I did, for crying out loud, I didn't want to eat the whole box. I only wanted one at a time. You know what I mean. We all have our imbalances, if you will, and some greater than others based on the trauma we've faced. But understanding those to be imbalances and not weaknesses is hugely important for us as human beings to accept ourselves and to accept other people.
Thank you for explaining that, Lee. And so now the opposite of that is self-regulation. And so what exactly, I'm trying to get a picture of what it would be to be completely self-regulating, to have that brain. Do you just, because when people do things like cognitive behavioral therapy, which can be very effective, they start looking at the patterns and they start trying to change their behaviors. But it's a long and slow process. So is self-regulation, when you get your brain balanced, do you just not even have to stop yourself? Does your brain just function much more clearly? How does it work?
Yep, that's right. You don't have to stop yourself because you're making better choices inherently. Let me give you the epitome of what I believe is the self-regulated brain. And that is that is represented by many people I've met who are Buddhist masters. They have tremendous neuroplasticity, and some can withstand extreme temperatures for a long period of time without any negative effects, because they can so self-control that that self-regulation and willful self-regulation is very, very powerful. So that's sort of the extreme of self-regulation, okay? Mm-hmm. The extreme of dysregulation would be like the student who grabbed a gun and began killing people on the campus some time ago, who cracked, who can't withstand anymore. And in order to let themselves jump off of that cliff, as I said, you know, they took the wrong path, and now here they are at the cliff. They take everybody with them that they can. Those are sort of the extremes. Does that help clarify it?
Yes, and so, Lee, I'm kind of curious, because it seems like people, even though we are at this late stage in our history, 2011 now, and we're learning all these things about the brain, we're learning all these things about psychology and physiology and everything, and yet people don't seem to be overall getting better. The general population seems to be getting worse in their behavior, worse in their reactivity, and I'm wondering if that's a symptom of all of the television and the Blackberries and all of that, or what do you think is causing this extreme dysregulation in our society?
Well, that you just asked me the million-dollar question, and I don't know the answer. I do hypothesize, however, and you may not like my answer.
Okay.
I hypothesize that people have faced huge disparity between what they've been told, particularly by what they've been told by religious and spiritual and awareness thinking and thinkers, and the reality of that which they experience, that try as they might, they cannot, because they are stuck, get into a meditative state. Try as they might, that they cannot feel love and compassion because they have a trauma print and they have an area of their brain that's simply out of balance and it doesn't connect in that way. And because they have nowhere now to go, they choose to be apathetic at best, or disgruntled at worst. So it seems to me that we have been lax in understanding the human condition from the standpoint of the human condition. By that I mean we've missed the boat in trying to grasp that the brain is driving me, and it is driving me to have an understanding of God. It is driving me to have an understanding of myself, connected to self, connected to you, connected to creation. The brain is driving that pattern. And if, in fact, that functional brain pattern is extremely out of balance, there is no way on this planet that I can get there. So I think we've lost a lot of hope. And it doesn't mean that all is hopeless, but I just think we've lost a lot of hope.
So Lee, it's when we were talking about the things that we know we should do, like I know that I should meditate first thing in the morning, I know that I should not watch as much TV, and I know that I should yada, 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 yet I find myself falling into the same patterns. It's the end of the day, I haven't meditated yet, then I feel guilty, or whatever judgments come up for me. I end up watching more TV than I need to, or for some other people, they might drink more alcohol than they had intended, or whatever. And So it's that automatic brain response that's driving us to do that before we even have a chance to realize, oh, I'm doing this when I...
You're exactly right. Yeah. You're exactly right. That's an automatic function, and it's happening, and you know, and the brain's doing it for a reason, by the way. And that's what we got to get. The brain's doing it because somehow that activity, what it may, or non-activity, but that action is in fact connected to helping the brain to seek its own balance.
And so, Lee, let's talk about, first of all, the New Year's resolutions. I went to the gym on January 2nd when it opened, and it was packed. It was a Sunday.
Yeah.
Normally, it's
yeah.
a ghost town.
I know.
And I said to my friend, well, don't worry. 3 weeks from now, half of these people will be gone.
Yeah, so actually, it's almost 70% statistically, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
So most will be gone in the first month. 70% will be gone in the first month. Yeah.
And I mean, that's good for me because then I don't have to wait for machines. But what about the people that are, you know, they join, they pay all this money, and you can see, you can almost just visually tell who the people are that are resolutioners and who the people are that are regular gym goers.
Yeah, I know. You can tell.
You can just see it, and you're like, And I'm betting that every year they do this. They go to the gym, and there was one woman that I saw on a machine I was waiting for who must have been close to 400 pounds, if not more. Wonderful for her to be making an effort to go to the gym. But I just imagined her doing this every year. You know, every January she gets up at the gym, and then next year she's 50 pounds heavier, and she's back at the gym in January. Can't do it. And so for someone like that, I would imagine that you, at the Brain State Technologies, you get a lot of people coming to you in January and February. So let's say...
Well, we get a few coming to us in January. We get a lot coming to us in March.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Why did I do it?
Yeah. I mean, first they have to hit the wall a little bit, right? But let me explain something about... let's take that person that you just identified, that she's very, very heavy. Obesity is, in fact, one of the top most dramatic negative health diseases in the Western culture.
Mm-hmm. Probably a lot of physical and emotional pain, too.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. Let's take that, her, for example, and those that face that kind of problem. For the most part, you know, we have stomach stapling or, you know, a bypass connection in the in the stomach area to help alleviate the digestive process, diminish it so that the person can, in fact, lose weight, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you know what happens to the majority of those people, do you not? Or do you? The majority actually lose weight for a while, and then they actually gain more than they had.
Yeah.
Now, why is that? They have made every effort. I mean, think about the effort they have made. The courage that these people have is almost unimaginable, right? Because I don't know if I would have somebody go in and put staples in my stomach to reduce its volume. So the courage these people have to try to live is huge, and I so admire them. But on the other hand, I so understand that that's not the answer. That brain pattern drives that person to pick up that carbohydrate instead of that vegetable. It drives that person, and it drives the digestive system itself to turn food into fat more than to use it as energy. Now, just think about how incredibly imprisoned that individual actually is. It's amazing. And they are imprisoned because of a trauma print which caused their brain to be imbalanced, and their brain is functioning now, and it's giving the wrong signals. And it will cost them their life.
And so, I mean, I can totally relate to that person, because I actually was able to lose 80 pounds through diet and exercise.
Mm-hmm.
And then I gained all of it back. Not
mm-hmm.
more, thankfully, but I gained all of it back. And I realized at that point that it wasn't just the physical. I mean, I needed to do the diet and the exercise, and that's very important, but there was more to it than that. There was the emotional aspect. There was the habitual aspect. And even if I'm having a binge, I know consciously that I shouldn't be doing it. But there's just a part of me, even as I'm at the store buying donuts or whatever it is that I've chosen to my poison for the day, I know that it's harmful to me, and yet there's a part of me that is just not able to stop myself for some reason.
See, there's one thing to garner strength in order to, as you say, stop yourself, or, you know, that's one thing. And people develop workarounds for that, okay, of some kind. And there's quite another thing not to have the urge.
Yes, that would be much better.
We're not here to help you stop something. We're here to take away the urge. When the brain pattern balances, the fact is that the urge diminishes. Because it's the brain pattern in an out-of-balance state itself that's trying to bring itself back into balance somehow. And so all brain state as a technology does, and that's what we talk about in the book Limitless You, is how people choose to use this tool, this technological tool, to be a guide for them back to a balanced state. Now, some people can be can find spirit guides or can find meditation, right, to go back to a balanced state. And that's absolutely true, and that's been proven over and over, and it's extremely helpful. However, it's a relatively small proportion of people, because the people that are struggling the most generally have trauma prints that put them in a stuck position and will not let them turn around on that path when they get to the cliff. They're stuck. And and societally, we pay no homage to that reality. That is a reality, for crying out loud. We can measure it. We can see how much there is. It's measurable. It's not a question. It's not a theory. It's not a woo-woo, whatever. It's science. We measure the brain patterns. We see the imbalance. Now, that matters. That matters. Because that drives the function of the person. It drives the behavior of the person. It drives the emotion of the person. And it drives the spiritual context for the person. Wow. That's a biggie, huh? I mean, if I were going to do something for myself, you know, I went on vacation. Can I do a little self story here?
Sure.
I went on vacation. You know, we went to Hawaii. I was in Hawaii, and I was not, here I was in paradise. I wasn't feeling so chipper. Quite the opposite. And I'm wondering, what in the world's going on? So I crawl in bed, and I hook myself up. It said I was off the host key. I don't know what that means. Are you still there?
Yeah, I can still hear you.
Oh, okay.
Go ahead.
Anyway, I hook myself up and begin looking at my brain, and I see, wow, it's not functioning so well. So I spend about, 4 hours almost, you know, working with reflecting back optimized brain patterns, and now I'm feeling pretty good. Go talk to a great friend of mine who's also a PhD in psychology and a well-known therapist. And, talking about what just happened, and I'm thinking, my gosh, look at this. I've had these many sessions for the last 4 years, almost the same time of year. Could it be, and it is, I believe, that in fact my brain pattern, my behavior at this time of year, i.e. over the holidays, from my youth has been, I'm not supposed to be too happy because things aren't going to go very well. See what I mean?
A lot of us relate to that, yeah.
Well, once I saw that, I had to chuckle, you know, because in fact, this is what I do. And I look back the last 3 years, and I've had many sessions sometime in December or early January. And I think, wow, and I have little notes, not feeling up to par, or feeling kind of down, or da-da-da-da-da. And I thought, wow, it's like a seasonal affective disorder, but it's not caused because of lack of sunshine. In this case, it's caused because of the training and pathways my brain went through when it started to hear the Christmas music, when it, you know, all this stuff, right? And then as a child, I suppose, I had expectations and that weren't realized. And so I started feeling bad just knowing beforehand that those weren't going to be realized. And so, but anyway, it was remarkable to come to that, that clarity. And yet, could I have done it without technology? Yeah, possibly. I possibly could have. You talked about cognitive behavioral therapy. That's certainly one possibility. But it would have taken a long time. And this didn't take long.
And so, Lee, I have a question, though, because you are the founder of Brain State Technologies, so you've obviously been using this brain optimization technology for quite some time, and yet these things are still coming up for you. So, I mean, how many times do you have to go and do this before you're like the extreme, like one of the Buddhist monks who can sit in sub-zero temperatures and regulate their body temperature just through the will of their mind?
Well, understand, please, that when we're talking about those Buddhist monks of extreme potential of self-regulation, they've started when they're 3 or 4 years old, and they're spending 8 to 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. You realize that?
Mm-hmm.
And they're now 40, 50 years old. So to achieve that is one path. It's not a path for me. I would rather achieve as much of life as I can. And, you know, it's okay for me. But the fact is that I'm explaining something that's a sort of a I'm not up to par feeling, not something that would take me into a toboggan slope to a dark place or something. You know what I mean? It's just not being optimized. I can feel that. I'm very aware. And so if you're stuck, you can't even feel that. You can't even feel that.
So it sounds like what you're saying is that through the brainwave optimization, you're going to be able to create this change much more quickly than with all of the years of therapy and cognitive behavioral therapy and all of the stuff that we've all been trying for years and years. That's going to happen much more quickly. It's not going to prevent any negative feelings from ever coming up, but it's going to clear you so that you're actually able to notice those feelings and then deal with them.
And it's going to enable you to go into other kinds of modalities more powerfully. So you will gain extreme awareness of self and others. You will have capability to go and to move into meditative states to be refreshed and also to be able to, clear your mind of any kind of monkey brain work. So you're able to do that sort of at will. And that's powerful. It's interesting to me that it's also contraindicated for what we might think of happening in the world. For instance, when we think about, let's say, a student studying, or when we think about a football player going on the field, right?
Mm-hmm.
What we would think about is if that student or that football player were going to be very, very good at what they would do, they would be very excited and the student would be concentrating very hard and the football player would be very, amped up, right? And emotional to get into the game and challenge his opponent, and et cetera. Okay? Wrong. Absolutely wrong. The student is going to be peaceful, and there's no better word to describe his or her demeanor than peaceful and accepting. And guess what? The athlete who's going to be the high performer is the very same. When you think about, for example, the superheroes on any athletic venue, be it football, hockey, basketball, whatever, or golf, you can see those superstars all being sort of laid back. They move easily. You know what I mean? They're sort of working in the zone. They have flexibility to move physically and sufficient confidence and observation to know how to change things if they have to in the contest, etc. But take one of those superstars and give them a trauma. And then guess what happens? After a while, that trauma will get them. And they will start coming unglued. Football player Brett Favre retired. We hear terrible things about him in the news now. But you know what? For 20 years, this man took tremendous blows in the head. And I guarantee you, that brain balance is so far out, right?
Mm-hmm.
That it's impossible to me that he can even communicate almost. We hear these stories, and sometimes we hear them directly after a trauma occurs, and they're proof positive that, in fact, that trauma pattern inherited by the brain as a functional imbalance is now driving that person to be less than optimized. And generally in every way, by the way. Generally in their personal life, in their sporting event, in every way.
So Lee, let's talk about what happens when you start the brain state optimization. There was an article in People magazine. Winona
yes.
Judd underwent this, and now she's lost a whole bunch of weight and looks fabulous. And so, I mean, for someone who has, let's say, an average amount of trauma, most of us are walking around with some low-level trauma, and we have these regular patterns of misbehavior or things that we wish we could do differently. And so for someone like that, how many treatments would it take? What does it look like when they go in for the first time, and how do things change in their lives?
Well, the first thing that happens is that the affiliates, and there are about 140 affiliates around the world in about 17 countries now, but the client goes in and the affiliate places sensors on their scalp in different locations to measure all of the functional brain patterns for that person. And then the computer digests those functional brain patterns and presents to that affiliate or that brainwave optimization technologist, it presents to them where that person's brain is out of balance and, in fact, how the particular designs for the protocols that can help the brain, guide the brain back to an optimized state. After that, the person goes in for sessions. And unfortunately, we don't have enough data yet to know how many sessions something's going to take. But our average is like about 12 to 14 sessions. However, please understand that if someone has extreme difficulties, we have people with cerebral palsy, we have people with Down syndrome, we have people with bipolar disorder, those kinds of extreme difficulties, right? Mm-hmm. That will take more, likely, sessions. And sometimes people who have insomnia, and even if they've had it for 10, 20 years even, they don't require too many sessions. So we never really know. The average, as I said, about 12 to 14. And then during each session, the sensors are placed back on the lobes that are out of balance, and the computer reflects back an optimized state for those lobes for that particular person, because it's individualized. That's how the process works. And it usually takes anywhere from a session's usually an hour and a half long, roughly. Some people like to just do it in an intensive way, so they do it in a week's time. Some will do it in 2 weeks, and others will, stretch it out a little bit. If they're dealing with addictions and substance abuse issues, it requires a shorter amount of time, not a longer amount of time, because the brain needs to balance quickly in order to reformat itself for alleviating the urge for substance.
And so then, Lee, after these 12 to 14 sessions, or however many it takes for you to feel better and like you're more optimized, then is there maintenance, or how does that work? Because you still find yourself feeling these things even when you're on vacation, and then you hook yourself up. So how does that work?
Generally, we have about maybe 2% of our 30,000 clients who we've seen come back, because generally of a trauma pattern that they've encountered or an awareness that they've encountered that they didn't have before. Sometimes it takes a while to come to a clarity of some of the traumas that the person's faced. And when they come to that clarity, they often want to, sort of get rid of it or have a guide to go through it. And so they'll come back for us for that from that standpoint. Sometimes they come back to us because there's an additional life circumstance, a trauma pattern that's emerging, a car wreck, a loss of a loved one, a divorce or betrayal by a love, you know, those kinds of things.
Okay, so it sounds like there can be layers to the trauma, like some of the trauma might be cleared and then you might realize that there's something more that hasn't been cleared yet, or there could be a new trauma that you want to clear.
Yeah, generally it's a new trauma pattern, but you're vulnerable to it because of your past. It's, you know, you're just more vulnerable to it. Trauma is something that does build in time, like you would fill a water bottle. And so when we're working with soldiers, we can pretty well see how a soldier A may come away from a incident without post-traumatic stress, and soldier B can come away from the same incident with a high amount of post-traumatic stress, because soldier B in fact went into the incident with his water bottle just about full.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I mean? And so, by the way, we've had about 500 soldiers with about 96% success. So we're pleased to have had opportunity to serve them as they've served us. But they are faced with 24/7 kinds of severe stress. You know, it's a kind of a life and death call 24/7. And then besides that, you're seeing things that you don't even want to explain, let alone, you know, imagine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, children strapped with bombs and yada, yada. So it's not a pretty thing, and it takes tremendous courage for them to just come and sit in the chair. But the reason that they can, by the way, is because they don't have to say anything to us. They don't have to tell us anything, right? Because we're not working with the person, we're working with the brain. And then once the brain balances itself, then they can speak their truth as they wish or need to.
So, Lee, we've talked briefly about how cognitive behavioral therapy or other modalities, and you said that the brain state technology can actually help you to get to a place where then you are able to work through it with other psychological modalities.
Right.
Like these soldiers, but before they wouldn't be able to even speak about it at all, and then they go for some sessions, and then maybe they could go to talk therapy to talk out their feelings.
First they can't speak about it.
Mm-hmm.
They're made extremely vulnerable, and they're extremely compromised in speaking about it. And probably the worst possible thing that could happen is to make them do that.
Because then they'd be reliving it.
Precisely. All you're doing is resetting and extending the trauma print. Boy, that's cool. Not. I just can't believe, I'm a psychotherapist too, by the way. I mean, it's not like I haven't studied this, and I didn't know at the time, you know. I just knew what was theorized. But now I'm back on my science side. I'm not a theorist. I'm not speculating. I'm measuring. And there's a huge difference in doing that. The problem that we have when we use a speculative kind of approach, which almost all of talk therapy is that we don't have an accurate measurement for that individual. And so we try to place them in a box that is defined by the circumstances of some. And they may not be any closer to that box than I am to an elephant at the moment. So it's very, very difficult to see a efficacy in that talk therapy world, which is beyond, say, measuring it effectively, is beyond, say, 26%. Usually it's much lower than that. So that's basically one out of four. About the same will happen if you have a really good friend. Now, if you take the other three-fourths of those people who weren't successful, those probably are people who have more extreme trauma patterns in their brain. And though I haven't measured that, that's what I hypothesize. And if you would do that, then you could start to relegate immediately, well, this person could go to talk therapy or this person could needs brainwave optimization. But when you ask the question, well, why would I want to do that? I can get through brainwave optimization in, you know, I don't know, 15 hours total in a week. Or two at the most, and I can go into talk therapy for, I don't know,
20 years.
Yeah, I mean, why would I want to do that? So I don't know. But I do know that when the stories that they tell us when they come out, when the soldiers come out of a brainwave optimization, the stories that they tell us are simply very, very succinct in saying, you know, I've lost friends and I understand it or I accept it. I've seen horrific impact and destruction of physical life and I accept what it is and I don't need to talk about it. But every test we've given them, including, Beck's depression inventory or stress inventory, shows that they've improved by an average of about 72%. So in about 8 sessions, it actually takes more for females than males, by the way. My mother told me that my greatest asset was my greatest liability. And so when you're talking about the brain, a great asset of a female is that she can multitask much better than a male can. Do you know that?
Yeah.
Yeah, I knew you would say that. I've never yet had one single female that didn't agree with me when I said that. That's so funny. But it's really, really nice of you to hesitate. So you all can multitask better, okay? But even though you can multitask better because your corpus callosum, the center line of your brain, is more permeable than mine, because a male's corpus callosum opens up and becomes a little bit more dense, and we are called dense at times. But understand that we can sometimes focus attention and so drive attention into something that we lose everything else, nothing around us. I can work on computer software. I know somebody walk in my office, I don't even know they're there, let alone, and even if they do walk in, sometimes they think I'm, wow, are you being real cold or what's going on? No, I didn't. I was just really not at home. I was working on something else. Or, you know, I'll be watching a game or a sporting event or something, and somebody will speak to me and I won't hear them. And ladies, it's not because we don't love you. It's just because we're not at home. We happen to be right in that sporting event. Because our brains function with a more thick, more dense corpus callosum, so we don't go from detail to context and context to detail back and forth as fast. Now, because of that, when we have a trauma print, it will affect our brains usually more so on one side than both. But for females, it will affect them usually on both sides.
And so then there's more neural pathways that are involved in the
precisely.
Trauma.
Precisely. That's precisely correct. And so, you know, we knew this 4 years ago, but the Department of Defense said a few months ago, the U.S. Department of Defense said, hey, female soldiers coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan are 2.5 times more likely to have severe mental disorders than males. But guess what? The corpus callosum of a female is 2.5 times exactly more permeable in general than a male. So those numbers aren't happenstance. Oh, and by the way, when you think about pathologies that involve a locking down of brain pattern, functional brain pattern, for instance, people on the autistic spectrum disorder is one. You understand, I suppose, that you know 93% of those people are male. So we're a lot more vulnerable to that kind of pattern malfunction.
Interesting. Well, Lee, we have a caller on the line who wants to ask you a question.
Shoot.
Is that okay? All right. So from all ones, I'm not sure if you're calling from Skype, but you are on the air.
Greetings, everyone. Namaste. This is a very interesting conversation because my husband is a soldier. And I do have a question, though.
Go ahead.
Are you afraid of the small percentage that this technology will literally basically give permission for individuals to revoke personal responsibility? And what I mean by that is that we are a technologically democratic country, you know, the Western world, and quick fixes. And sometimes technology is a wonderful thing, but sometimes I'm fearful of the fact that instead of individuals actually doing the spiritual work and taking the journey, because it is a part of, I believe, our evolutionary process as human beings to actually step into our shadow selves, that we're taking a quick fix for something that one sometimes needs to walk through in order to have certain epiphanies. So sometimes technology entering with this process can stunt one's growth. What do you feel about that?
Excellent question. Thank you.
First of all, we have to understand that technology, like medical science, can be very positive in assisting us on a pathway which will eventually allow us to go through the trials and tribulations of life which help us to learn who and what we are. And so the purpose of life is to define my purpose in life, right? And so in order to do that, I have to be capable of walking that path. And if I am not capable of it, then I think others who are connecting to me have a responsibility to try to help me to be capable. All brainwave optimization is doing is trying to help the person be capable of walking the path. It isn't alleviating the actual ups and downs of the path, but it's allowing the person to have, you know, neuroplasticity, flexibility, if you will, in order to do it. Just not unlike a, penicillin has saved, X number of lives, it's allowed people to overcome infections and its derivatives. It's allowed people to overcome infections. Brainwave optimization will allow people to continue walking.
So it sounds, Lee, like it's almost like if you break your arm, you would go and get a cast. Your body is still doing the work and you're still taking care and healing yourself, but it's just an assistance.
It's just a tool to help you continue, right? Yeah. It's not the answer. But here's
thank
important.
Thank you for answering my question.
Yeah, but here's an important part of that question that I don't have an answer to, but it's an ongoing question that I seek, and it sort of disturbs me. And that is this, that there is a certain part of the brain that we know about, and when we see an imbalance in that part of the brain, then people cannot relegate themselves well into a spiritual context. They can't feel or experience being connected to themselves, others, and or a spiritual reality. But when we change that pattern, or when that pattern changes, that person changes that pattern, what transpires from there is often the person will say to us something like, "You didn't tell me this was going to be a spiritual experience." Well, it wasn't actually a spiritual experience. You see what I mean? But in fact, what you have probably is you've built up a number of experiences, and it's as if there's a barrier for those experiences. It's like there's a dam, if you will. And what we've done is we've opened the floodgates of that dam by helping the brain to balance, and now that learning can come through. It's another way of thinking about it. And the reason it bothers me is because it forces me to think about that theologically in my understanding of faith and God and other in a whole new way, you know, in a very much more open way, by the way.
So it's the fact that some of these traumas are actually blocking a person's ability to access that spiritual side of them.
Yeah, I mean, I can't really infer that anybody's a blockhead anymore, can I? You know, right? I mean, they're just exactly like me, except they have one little pattern that's different. So I can't make any judgments now. Uh-oh. Now I'm really sunk, right? That's a joke, but you know what I mean, though, don't you?
Definitely. And Lee, we have just a few more minutes left, and we have one more question
okay.
on air. Are you ready? Okay. So from area code 305, you're on the air. Hi, what's your question?
Hi, Marie. My name is Deanna. I only tuned in halfway through the show. Are there clinical trials that you know of?
Great question.
There are we have published in peer-reviewed journals, in neuroscientific peer-reviewed journals, and we have trials in with various populations that you can find on our website. The website is brainstatetech.com, and you'll see more demonstrations with universities, and also the Fond du Lac reservation will be publishing this year as they've completed work last year.
Wonderful. Well, we're almost out of time. This hour has just flown by, but I did want to quickly ask you, as you mentioned about the people who have parts of their brain are just so traumatized they're not able to access their spirituality. You also mentioned that sometimes people with cerebral palsy or Down syndrome or other issues like that will go for brain state optimization. And so what about someone like Dexter, a serial killer, someone with extreme narcissistic personality disorder or a psychopath personality? What about them? I mean, if they were willing to go and sit in the chair, would it help them?
Yes, I believe it would. And I hope to talk with one of the Department of Corrections, that's probably one that we've already worked with, but to do some brain mapping of people who are, in fact, serial killers. Because I believe now seen different degrees of anger manifest in brain patterns that we have a hypothesis of where those imbalances are going to be.
And because things like people who are serial killers have had some kind of severe trauma in early childhood, correct? That's
Yes, very likely, and it may have been even in the womb.
Mm-hmm.
And
so,
all of the people
like a
that we've
injury or a circumstantial emotional trauma
could be all the above, and or a substance trauma. So the mother uses a drug or alcohol. There's tremendous violence in the family. The baby's not wanted and is kept, but regrettingly, without very much love. All of those are possibilities. There are extreme situations of you name it, and it's there in the world. But you can see that trauma pattern like you can see the rings of a tree. And from those rings of a tree, you can determine when a trauma has hit that particular place and in what life stage of the tree it happened. You can do that, the same basic thing, with a brain pattern.
And there's some mention in the chat room about potentially being dangerous. Have you seen any negative side effects from the brain state optimization?
The brain will not go to a negative place, to a place worse than it is, unless it has a reason to, unless there's a trauma that forces it to do so. Some people will experience some degree of negative emotion or reaction as they go through the training, and they will do that because they may have been so severely dissociated, disconnected from their own bodies, for example, that they will begin to feel the pain, could be physical or emotional pain that they haven't felt for a long time. And if those people will walk through that training time over time, they will get to the other side.
Wonderful.
The brain
just
will,
like with regular therapy, things come up, things that you might have been pushing away.
Yes.
And emotions may arise that you have to process.
Yeah. The beauty of it is that generally they'll process pretty quickly. And, you know, we have our director of research here is an MD. He also has his master's in medical research. But his infant daughter, a 16-month-old daughter, was hypersensitive, extremely hypersensitive, so much so if you touched her arm, she would scream. So we couldn't help him. We couldn't put sensors on her scalp, right? You couldn't even touch her. So what he did was he waited till she went to sleep, and then he hooked her up. Well, in doing that, in a few days, her hypersensitivity left her. She was cuddly, laughing, and in a week's time, she was talking because he trained her while she was sleeping at night for a few nights. Now, when he trained her, one of the interesting things that he observed was that, you know, her body took different kinds of jolts or jerks once in a while, right? And those jerks were releases, were physical releases. The brain was set into a pattern to make the infant hypersensitive, and she was able to physically release. And we've seen that in other people, especially with, say, football players, with people in car accidents or traumatic brain injuries, right? That have physical manifestations of frozen shoulders or whatever. But the same thing can happen to us with emotions, that we can have release periods. And those release periods aren't always comfortable.
And so, Lee, just before we wrap up the show, what's the difference? Because we've heard of hemisync with the sounds on each side of the ear. Dr. Stefan was talking about that last week. What's the difference between the brain state technologies and, if you're familiar with the hemisync, what's the difference between the two?
Hemisync is a way to entrain the brain. It's a way to tell the brain to function at a certain frequency, let's say at 12 hertz. So in one ear, you put 10 hertz, and in the other ear, you put 14 hertz, and the brain goes in the middle. It goes to 12 hertz.
Mm-hmm.
If everybody in the world needed 12 hertz, then I think it would be great. If everybody in the world needed size 16 shoes, I think everybody, it would be great. That's all we'd have to make. But in fact, we make a lot more sizes than that. So what we need to do is we need to measure what the brain requires, what frequency groups are needed, where they're needed, also not just all over, but specific lobes. And the difference is in, that's the difference.
Okay, so it sounds like the idea is somewhat similar. It's just...
Oh, no, it's nothing similar. It's nowhere similar at all. No. You don't measure anything with, you know, entrainment. You're trying to change the brain to a certain frequency. What we're trying to do is reflect the frequency in the brain that's in an optimized area back to itself. We're trying to create resonance to strengthen that optimized area. We're not trying to tell the brain anything. We're not smart enough to do that. But we can see if it's not functioning, left to right, back to front, front to back. We can see that, and we can measure that. Or we can see if it's how it's functioning in a specific lobe from in terms of the amount of low frequencies versus the amount of high frequencies. So that the left to right and front to back is called balance. The frequencies up and down the scale are called harmony. And so what we seek is balance and harmony for the individual, but we do that by measuring it. We put sensors on the scalp, and we look at the brain pattern, and we measure it. And that's much different than assuming that we can implant some size 16 shoe.
Okay. Thank you for clarifying that. And it looks like we have more questions coming up now as we're over time. So we'll have to have you back on the show again sometime in the near future, Lee. Thank you so much for being with us.
Okay, thank you.
BrainStateTech.com is your website. Is there anything you'd like to add before we close the show?
Well, the thing I started with, I guess, before, if the listener could simply think about that which they haven't done so well, or that which was not done so well to them, as simple manifestations of brain patterns that weren't balanced and not intentional, I think it can help us all in terms of understanding how we're connected and the basis of forgiveness and well-being.
Well, thank you so much, Lee, for being on the show. Happy New Year. And again, 140 different locations in 17 different countries. So if people are interested in having a brain state optimization, they can just go to your website and find something close to their area, hopefully?
Yep. They hopefully can.
Wonderful.
Okay.
Brain State Tech, T-E-C-H, BrainStateTech.com is the website.
Yep.
Great. Thank you so much, Lee. Happy New
okay.
Year. Have a wonderful
Thank
day.
Thank you. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye. So that was our guest today. Lee Gerdes is the author of Limitless You, The Infinite Possibilities of a Balanced Brain. If you're interested in more information about him and his book, you can go to namastepublishing.com. There's also a link on the show page for this. And if you're interested in finding out more about brain state optimization, you can go to his website, brainstatetech.com. And we'll be back in 2 weeks' time. We're now doing a show every other week. So please, if you would like to catch each show, do favorite the show on the Blog Talk Radio player. There's a little heart icon, and then you'll receive an email about an hour before each episode. Thank you so much for being with us. I hope that you have a wonderful new 2011, this new year and new decade. Thank you so much for being with us for the past year. If you're brand new, welcome to the show. And we will see you in a couple of weeks. Happy New Year. Be well. Namaste.
Thank you for joining with us for this hour of Namaste Radio. For further spiritual insights and sharing, please join us in Namaste Global Community at namastepublishing.com. If you enjoyed the show, please add Namaste Radio as a friend, favorite the show, and tell someone about it. Sharing this show is a precious gift that's completely free. Thank you. May you enjoy each moment of your day. Namaste.